Welcome to the Developer Tribe. It's good to have you here for episode 9 of season 2 as we continue to unpack the practice and process of developers, educators and beyond. Today we talk to a football coach and lecturer regarding his growing connection with ecological dynamics as a framework. As always, thanks for being here, however you got here, and with that, let's jump in. My guest today is a lecturer in applied coaching science at Oxford Brookes University and a PhD researcher at Canterbury Christ University with papers published investigating Quiet Eye and Ecological Dynamics Frameworks. His blog, Progress Towards Ambiguity, explains the process of this work far better than I could attempt to here. More recently, and what caught my eye, is a course that my guest is delivering via the Emergence platform on Rethinking Soccer, what an ecological dynamics framework could offer skill, learning, and development. Needless to say, there's a lot worth getting into today. A big welcome to my guest, Ben Franks.
Pleasure to be asked to come onto the show.
Yeah, of course. What's going on for you today?
A nice, quiet day of marking over the past 8 hours.
Okay, yeah.
A real fun one.
Having engaged in marking before, I understand some of the pains that can be, but yeah, it can also offer us a quiet time, can't it? So look, but before we get into what you can tell us about the course and making the very necessary explanations of ecological dynamics to me, tell us a little bit about your journey and where you find yourself now in your career.
Yeah, I've had a bit of a mad journey, really. I went to uni because I didn't really know what else to do. which was a nice turning point. I was just a very average goalkeeper. I played for a very average non-league academy program, kind of messed around for 2 years and just played football and did the bare minimum in terms of work. I was never overly kind of bright or that interested in school or education, so I kind of went to uni just to see what happened, did sport because I thought, I can do a bit of sport coaching. Probably looked towards going into community sport coaching or teaching, and it all kind of very quickly fell apart and I stumbled into academia. End of my third year, a master's became something I thought I'd be quite interested in. Started that master's, and then a member of staff left for the department, so I covered a few lectures for a few weeks. Then I turned into a semester, then turned into another semester. And then I kind of caught the bug, became an associate lecturer at Oxford Brookes. Unfortunately, wasn't able to secure a permanent position there, so I left and went to UCFB, the University Campus of Football Business, which is a wonderful place. They've got the most incredible coaching team there on their coaching degrees. But I stayed there for a year. PhD was always my big aims, and I left there for Canterbury Christ Church to take on an instructor role / PhD role. So did 18 months there. And then a job at Oxford Brookes popped back up, and I kind of was too good to not apply for and not kind of throw my hat in the mix. And thankfully I got appointed that one literally last week. So a pretty rapid journey, I think, and not one I ever expected or anyone I know ever thought I'd get into. It was kind of by accident, really.
Well, yes, by accident, but you know, we have to take these opportunities when they arrive, and it sounds like you've grabbed onto them with both hands. So look, your work is embedded with ecological dynamics principles, as we said, and I'll hold my hands up now and say that I simply don't know enough about the framework, though I've always enjoyed reading about its possibilities. To properly comment on its utility, that's not for me to do. So prior to getting into those principles themselves, I'm interested in the terminology for your course, in that it says what it could offer. Was that deliberate?
Yeah, that was really deliberate, because I think I say we as a collective term for people that like the ecological framework, but I think we have a tendency to perhaps overstretch some of the ideas, particularly in terms of ecological dynamics, because it is relatively new. ecological dynamics, opposed to something like ecological psychology, is really only in its the very start of its journey. It only really dates back to probably the turn of the century, maybe 1997. There was a paper by Hanford, which first kind of proposed this ecological component in sport. So it's new, and I think we're a bit quick to get excited with some of the ideas and some of the really cool research. So yeah, I was conscious of saying that it's the be all and end all, and I'm quite clear to see it as an overarching framework to ground our practices that are involved, that are concerned with skill, learning and development, opposed to it being a bigger coaching approach, because I think that's too multifaceted to really just pin down with one ecological dynamics as being this coaching approach. And it's not, it's more of a, as you said, a theoretical framework.
Yeah, and without putting you on the spot, considering, I mean, I appreciate what you said there about it being, you know, relatively neophyte. There's not the level of academic history that perhaps other frameworks has. However, there's still a lot out there. And with that in mind, I would like you to explain a bit more about what ecological dynamics is, what the framework is, in the knowledge that we cannot possibly expect you to summarize it in a few minutes.
Yeah, I see ecological dynamics as a really nice tool to explain learning, movement, and skill in complex environments. I think that was its first intention, and I think that's where we still need to focus. And I think we see that as being some kind of combination of principles in ecological psychology, which are related to direct perception and perceiving affordances and rejecting the need to make some kind of mental inference in order to have some motor skill or action that follows. And then looking at some of the dynamic systems theory stuff, where we start to look at everything as being more interrelated. Everything's changing over time and changing its state. So sports teams, sports environments, athletes' life, kind of trajectories throughout the life course that they have in sport are all really complex. And dynamic systems provides a nice lens to view how those complexities interact. So when we couple those two things together, we get ecological dynamics. And it's basically just a theoretical framework that we can use to position ourselves and then inform how we engage with the practice environment when we're concerned with skill learning, with development, with practice structures, opposed to, I think, opposed to those other coaching aspects.
There's a great description, but give us some examples of what you mean by those other coaching aspects then.
So I think the issue that I've found lately is we've used ecological dynamics as a coaching approach when it isn't one. It doesn't really address much in terms of the use of, be careful here, because I don't want to get this wrong. those other aspects of coaching, you know, around dealing with emotions of athletes, the more interrelated, the more nested and softer, as you call it, coaching stuff. So there is some very nice coaching pedagogy literature. There is some very nice skill acquisition literature. And I think we should use ecological dynamics around this skill acquisition stuff and be cautious of trying to overreach with ecological dynamics into the other aspects of coaching around managing behavior, dealing with athletes' emotions, those kind of aspects. I think we have to be cautious with. I'm not saying it might not be able to be breached over in the future, but I think focus on what its primary intentions were.
Okay, that's interesting. So in terms of the ecological term then, because I guess I understood that as, you know, all encompassing, you know, the whole environment. By skill acquisition, you don't mean it to include, perhaps, as you say, the sort of softer skills, so psychological skills, emotional skills.
I think they're embedded, they're involved. Okay. They can't be completely disattached, but I think ecological dynamics is a framework And then by default, using things like a constraints and approach, which again is a more on the ground kind of tool that we have. If we look at those constraints that interact, we can include things like emotions and the anxieties of individuals, and we can manipulate our sessions around that. But I think our primary intention, if we're saying we're adopting an ecological dynamics framework, is our concern is mostly to do with skill learning and development in that context, in that moment. Mm-hmm. And then that shapes our interactions and our practices. I think the issue is when we start to bridge ecological dynamics elsewhere, when I don't think we fully understand the space we're currently with it.
Okay. So, forgive me, if we're talking about emotional skills as an example, or a social and emotional competencies, then that is included because that's considered sort of part of the skill learning. But the actual emotive responses to practice, practice design, as we put it together, that's something that perhaps for you sits slightly outside. Like you say, not disattached, but not within the framework.
I think so. And I think it's because we don't know enough about it. And that's maybe my lack of knowledge in the area. But broadly, in terms of ecological frameworks, I don't think we know well enough about mental states like anxiety, kind of where it's held and where it fits in the ecological picture. So there is a lot of very good research which looks at the impression that anxiety has on skill learning. The answers we have as to why that happens in ecological dynamics, we're not quite so clear on. There's some good stuff, but it's not well accounted for yet, I don't think. And typically we have to go back to the ecological psychology stuff. Now there is a really good, I think it's a book chapter. There's a cognitions and emotions in ecological dynamics. I think it's Dwight Rocco and Keith Davids. And that starts to address some of those things. But in terms of real hard-hitting experimental stuff, I don't think it's as clear a picture as some of the more traditional literature is and the account it has for that.
And I mean, of course, it's theoretical, so it almost should be fallible. And as such, then it's that framework that perhaps offers us a way of working. So rather than going down that rabbit hole, you know, let's really talk about, you know, well, what does ecological dynamics as a framework offer us? If I'm a football coach, because I know that's primarily the sport you deal with, and mine, so that's useful. But if I'm a football coach and I'm sitting down to put my session designs together, maybe even more overarching periodization, how do I apply EcoD principles into what I'm doing?
So I think, and again, this is another big one about differentiating between, we have ecological dynamics, we have the constraints and approach, and then even things like nonlinear pedagogy. And at times they're all used interchangeably, and that in its own right gets really difficult and confusing and is probably part of the misunderstanding. I see ecological dynamics as this bigger overarching theory, which kind of shapes our worldview. It shapes how we understand learning to take place. It shapes how we understand interactions in terms of individuals and multi-agents, so kind of multiple people interactions as well. Constraints to the approach provides us a bit more of a coaching lens. We can start to understand, well, if I'm going to plan a session, I need to consider these three constraints and how they're going to interact with each other, how this is all interrelated, and how that's going to shape the intentions of my session. We then have nonlinear pedagogy, which is probably a bit more of a pedagogical tool. So it informs the things I'm actually doing in that space a bit more. So that's kind of where I see the three fitting together. So if I was to answer the question you actually asked around how are those principles of ecological dynamics inform what I'm doing? I think by appreciating that learning is nonlinear, that human systems are inherently variable, that there is noise in the system, i.e. there's variability around what we're doing, and we have to appreciate and accept that, and that we act in accordance by perceiving and acting. We're guided by our sensory systems. We have to have something going on that we couple to, And then that is, I guess, our bigger overarching theme. There is some mutuality between myself and my environment, or yourself and your environment, or one of the children I coach and their environment. There is a coupling there that we can't disconnect. And that has to form the basis of all of our decision making. Is I can't take anything out of that context, that there is a relationship that's been established that works both ways. So everything I do from here on out has to appreciate that I can't decouple that. I can't just look at the person. I can't just look at the environment, because there's always going to be that interaction between the two. And I think that's the fundamental part, and probably where some of the more difficult conversations happen, by saying, oh, well, I use bits of ecological dynamics here and I use bits of information processing here. And I think the issue people get is that there is these underlying assumptions that are at total odds of each other. So if we're using bits and bobs of each, we're not really using either, because we're changing our way we view the world. And I think we can only have one way of viewing the world. I think we start to, I don't know. That's my opinion. I think we can only have one worldview. Like, we can only ascribe to one perspective of reality. And I think if we apply this ecological dynamics, we view the world and that person being coupled together. If we take another approach, a more computational approach, then we look more inherently internally at that individual rather than how that individual relates to the world.
Yeah, that's well put, and but it still sits uncomfortably for me, and you know, that again might be just because I don't have that level of understanding of either. But I think from a personal perspective, you know, and you said about sort of worldview, I guess my worldview is somewhat, I prefer it to be nuanced. I prefer it to be able to there's an area of the academic literature that doesn't appear to have got very far, maybe for good reason, but it's called principled eclecticism. And I just really like the idea of, if this particular technique, if I can qualify that this technique happens to work in this particular situation with this individual in this context, yeah, that's kind of where I sit, I suppose. But I understand what you're saying, and I guess that it's important to really try to align to a really principled approach.
I think I'd probably agree with you that if we find a technique that works, that's fine. Because I think a lot of the techniques and methods we use are probably quite similar between whether you adopt an ecological perspective or a more traditional, or not traditional, that's not fair, but maybe a more internalized model like information processing or predictive coding theory or whatever. I think a lot of the tools we use are quite similar. I can't say that there's coaches I know who are very much, and coaches I've worked with who are brilliant coaches, who are informed by more traditional 1980s literature in terms of motor learning and schema. Like, they're still brilliant coaches, and we still do a lot of activities that are similar. I think it's probably the way we explain why we're doing certain things that are different. And I think that's been caused by, at times, some of the all or nothing rhetoric used on the ecological dynamics side of the coin, rather than, I don't want to end up throwing people under the bus here, but that's not what I'm trying to do. But I think it was maybe because it's a new area, we're finding our feet with it. Mm. We've taken some statements further than they were meant to be taken. Like, there's times where I will still use massively reduced sessions, which lack any variability, lack any opposition, but my intentions are around considering our player load and considering the time of the season, considering the day. It's pre-season, they're off the back of four massively high tempo sessions and two games in 10 days. I might say, you know what, we can have a nice little one tonight. We can do some nice little patterns, bit little light jogs in between. Like, my intentions have shaped that, but I'm still seeing it with an ecological hat on. I'm seeing it because, well, there's some governing stuff here. There's some organismic or person constraints that are having quite a big impact on how I'm going to design this session. So I think it's just, and this is what makes me laugh about all the social media arguments, is that most of our coaching looks quite similar. And there's not radical differences between whether you adopt an ecological approach or not. It's more how we explain and understand learning. And I don't think those conversations are all that helpful at times, because that then ascribes to our worldview, and people don't tend to change their worldviews very often because they're kind of deep and personal to us and shape our being. And I think it goes beyond sport. I don't know. That's how I see it. And I don't see there being many different techniques or methods between the two. It's more the explanations of why we're using X method at X time with X players. And that's shaped by our intentions. So we might see slightly more representative style sessions in an ecological camp just because they think learning occurs that way. Whereas you might still some more blocked session stuff with a competition-based coach because they see learning taking place that way. But we still jump in and out of each other's camps. We still jump in and out of each other's methods and techniques and styles of coaching.
Yeah, I think you touched on something really important, or rather the bit that resonated for me. I'm sure those listening in will have perhaps picked up on other things, but one of the things that resonated for me there was that consideration of the physical training load for our players. You know, for me, I like the games-based approach. I think that I sit further towards that camp than anything else. But that doesn't mean that I would ever say there's no place for any unopposed work whatsoever. When we're working with, particularly with grassroots clubs, where, you know, they have contact with players far less than we would expect at a professional level, it's understandable to perhaps say to them, more games-based approach style is probably where we want to go, so that there's a more realistic experience. But if I've got players 5-6 times a week, one of which those contacts is a game, for physical reasons and for many other reasons, I'm sure there's a rationale there to do something more reductive, more technical based, or perhaps directed towards individual learning plans.
Yeah, definitely. When you've got 16 hours a week to fill with players, you can't do higher tempo small sided games for an entire week because you won't have any legs left. And I think I've softened on this, and I know I upset a few people a couple of years back because I was the worst one for being an absolute troll on Twitter and finding any session that was unopposed and hammering it and chucking all this unnecessary technical language about why it doesn't ascribe to ecological dynamics. And then I grew up a little bit. That wasn't helpful. And I didn't really know the context that session was taking place in. It wasn't until I started to work at better levels and in context where I had more contact with players and with more technology to help us plan sessions, where I thought, oh, hang on, maybe it's time to drop down the scale of representative sessions, or how time to reduce some variability, it's time to reduce some load. So I think, yeah, I've softened that. I guess that's where we're still finding our feet with all these different things and how it shapes our worldview of stuff.
And I think, you again, touching on something really important there, and thank you for your honesty, but touching on something important there, that perhaps the conversations need to be more about, well, does this practice design, regardless of what framework we're applying to it, what worldview we're applying to it, does this practice design achieve what it sets out to do? So, you know, do we need to apply EcoD, constraints-led approach, to a practice design, the explanation of a practice design, when we see lines and laps and those types of practices? Do we really need to do that other in order to explain where it's gone, where it's going wrong? Probably not, for my opinion, in any case.
I agree.
You mentioned nonlinear pedagogy as, again, something that I've come up against. What are the principles that apply to, or perhaps should apply to, our work that relate to nonlinear pedagogy?
Nonlinear pedagogy is an interesting one. I just started some work with Simon Phelan, who's also at Brooks, Oxford Brooks, and kind of really debating what nonlinear pedagogy offers us and why it's talked about as being brilliant. A lot of coaches you know, they really ascribe to the foundations of it. But we typically see it really struggling to land in real context, particularly with kind of like PE teachers, for example, where not only the pedagogy, the philosophy of it is often hampered by some of the constraints that we're faced at a structural level. So non-linear pedagogy, I think, is a really good framework, and it underpins the theory stuff in ecological dynamics really well. So that's centered around manipulating constraints to promote, you know, emergent movement possibilities. It's structured on providing opportunities or providing spaces to allow functional variability. So are they solving the task, but is it, you know, are they finding unique ways to do it? Are we not ascribing to this one set model of how to move? Are we being driven by, you know, allowing learners to couple information and movement and take advantage of affordances? So there's some really good stuff in there, which I think guides coaching and teaching really nicely. And it underpins a lot of the stuff that the Boeing project, the Prime PE project, was kind of found, the foundations were built off that in terms of those principles of learning and coaching. So I think it's really a really nice framework. We just don't see it used as much as we perhaps should do. And one of the criticisms, I think, is the fact that as a pedagogy, it doesn't tell the full picture of what is involved in pedagogy. Pedagogy goes way beyond just setting up that practice environment and some engagement with your learners. Pedagogy includes all kinds of aspects around how to interact with learners in terms of questions and feedback. And we touch on that in the non-linear pedagogy, but it's nowhere near as deep enough as other pedagogical models have been on that particular aspect. But again, non-linear pedagogy, I think, again, it's a nice guiding tool. It provides coaches with a nice toolbox to engage with. Doesn't tell coaches how to coach, just gives them some principles to align with. To think of things like allowing functional variability, i.e. allowing learners to explore movements that they're capable of and that are unique to them, and ways they can solve problems, which might not be something that I think they can do, and they can then explore it in their own way, in their own body, and that kind of stuff.
Rather than something that's perhaps a little bit more prescribed by
us? Yes, yeah. So there's an example of a while back when I was working in a school for Boeing, and one of the games was centered around, so you know, in the sports where you've got all the lines of the different pitches and courts.
Yeah.
So one of the games are based around moving along those lines, and it was basically, it was a bit like Pac-Man.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could jump across lines and that sort of stuff. So two kids came together, and the teacher's immediate, and one of the kids jumped onto another line. And the teacher's immediate response was, can't do that, you skipped a line. And we were like, wow, wicked. Yeah, it skipped a line. That's so cool. And the teacher was like, that's not in the rules. There are no rules. Yeah. Like, we're just solving problems. They're moving. But how can we be angry at a child moving in a really cool way? So I think that's where some of the issues come in. Is there a bit of a philosophical issue, again, that's shaped by our worldview behind what we see as being correct. And again, this isn't, we have to be careful, I'm not rejecting that there are parameters on how we do movements. Like, there are ways we can throw that are governed by how our body works, governed by gravity. Like, I can't throw it in any way. I can't just self-organize and throw it in any random way. I feel like there are some conditions that we have to sit within. There's like a bandwidth we have to sit within for something to be effective skill, but it's allowing them to explore that bandwidth, explore the variability that exists within that bandwidth that is unique and a solution to them.
Which could be very important for the individual, but I suppose the counter argument to it, which doesn't make much sense to me, but the counter argument to it would be that we've sort of reached this pinnacle understanding of what we're physically capable of.
Mm.
That doesn't sit well for me.
I guess we see those trends in elite athletes. We see a couple of years after someone does something mental, all the coaching manuals change and we coach in that way. So now most sprinters are identified off the base of bolts and trying to drive like that, whereas it previously it was all based around people who look like Asper Powell and were a little bit kind of lower and smaller and more powerful from the base. So that, yeah, there's there's variability within elite athletes, and there's data to support that, but we still have these more controlled methods of teaching skills. And I think we had to just maybe, and this is again is where we need to meet in the middle a little bit, that we can't just let kids run around and do whatever they want. There's a time for that, but there is also time for some coaching and helping them find the premium point within that bandwidth of that variability. There is good and there's bad variability. Like, we know that. So it's helping them find that sweet spot in that bandwidth of variability. Mm. So that might involve some free play where we just say, cool, see you later. Just go do whatever you want to go explore your body in time and space. But then there might be some times for where let's scale it back a little bit. It's time we put some parameters on their learning to maybe help scaffold and guide them. So let's help them find that. And that's when we start to reduce things a bit. So that's what I've almost, yeah, I'm using my ecological worldview. That's how I make sense of these realities in learning. There's a time for free play. There's a time for some more structure. But I still think fundamentally, we still have to ascribe to their relationship between that person and their environment, and then finding that unique fit they have with that task or that problem in that environment.
Which means not abdicating our role as a coach. You know, it's. I'm not entirely sure where that misinterpretation came from, but and it's not just because of ecological dynamics stuff for sure.
I think there was a line in a paper in the early 2000s which said constructed approach is a more hands-off approach, and people have taken that line rather than the line after it, which I find I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, however, the coach isn't, like, so we've just taken that little chunk and ran away with it for a few years. Now there's this big misunderstanding that constructive approach is just kind of make an environment and just go, now we're done.
Right.
50 minutes down on the side, maybe change some rules rather than coaching and being active in that environment. So I think we're shifting back towards the coach being relevant and active and having to do some coaching. It's just those big paradigm shifts. So we've gone from models of PE where it's very static all the way to games of the problem solver of the world, just put kids in free environments. And now we're starting to shift more towards the middle. It's always going to go in ebbs and flows and whatever's popular. I mean, the next team that wins the World Cup, you know, could say that, oh, we've just done, you know, say Brazil win the World Cup next, then there's a whole narrative built around street football and free play. We'll probably swing back towards free play, but then, you know, one of the, who know, gosh, I can't even think of a team, some niche team like Croatia who were built on that more structural model, or Iceland, then we might swing back the other way and be more around structure and more fixed principles. And it just, yeah, it just ends up being a populism contest for who's the winner and how can we copy them.
I don't know if I have any Croatian listeners and whether they might take umbrage at being called a niche country. I'm not sure that if I did have any, I might have lost them there. And there was something else important there where you spoke about, you know, yes, we're putting constraints on practices, and that can, although I guess it doesn't mean this, but it can automatically sound like coach controlled, that there is a place for players attempting to break the practice, for want of a better phrase, and actually I really enjoy seeing those moments, you know, where you've spent time putting a practice together and a kid of 10 and 11 finds a way to do your game far better than you could have ever imagined, and totally breaks the rules, you know, but still manages to achieve. And it's important that I think as coaches that we flex in those moments.
Mm. Yeah, massively. When our intentions of the session just go out the window. I'm trying to think back to an example of that happening. There's been tons, but I can't. It's been that long since I feel like I've coached.
Yeah. We haven't been able to set foot on the field for a while. Well, I can often think of, you know, those practices where we put in thirds, you know, and it's kind of maybe one up, one down. And, you know, there's a constraint that we're putting on the practice that is for all kinds of genuine reasons. But it's not long usually before you find that maybe one more player should have gone, or maybe one player less, or it doesn't quite fit with a certain situation that happens. So there may not be enough flexibility in the way that those constraints are put in. That might be the issue. But also during practice, when we notice that players have maybe exceeded the learning that could take place under those constraints, and they've noticed a way in which they can extend that practice to then move into the next thing, which in this case might be as simple as, I now need to be able to get into that middle third. Yeah, have that conversation with them. I mean, I can remember doing that in football practice with, you know, 10-year-olds. It looked, you know, it's always Johnny. Johnny gets a bad rap, but you know, Johnny looks like you look like you want to go into that midfield third. Yeah. I want. Well, why? Well, I need to support the attack here. Oh, brilliant. Go for it. Well, I can do that next time. Yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, don't tell anyone else. Right? So we have to have that flexibility as coaches in those situations.
And that only comes from us being engaged in that context. Yeah, that's just sparks an example I was thinking of. It's not my coaching, sadly. But I was speaking to Ant White the other day, the under-19s, under-23s goalkeeper coach of England, and he set up his practice, brilliant practice, around kind of a goalkeeper staying high and sweeping up on the edge of the box. And there was two gates the other side of the pitch, and the goalkeeper on the other side basically just drops the ball into either one of the gates. The goalkeeper has to get there to sweep up. And he's dummied, the goalkeeper's dummied one gate and just cut it back to the other gate. And the goalkeeper's like, sat 30 yards away from the ball, can't do anything. And it's almost those moments where they beat the game, where it almost brings it closer to real life performance, because real life performance is surrounded by dummies and cuts and those unpredictable moments. So, yeah, we'll encourage learners to beat the game, encourage them to throw the rules out the window almost.
Just find a way. You know, I mean, that's what we require of players when they're in the game. We need you to find a way to solve the problems that are coming up for you in the match. I can't do it for you. Even if I see that and I verbally tell you what comes next and maybe a way to solve it, I have no necessary, not exact power over that player to go for them to do it. And it'd be far better that they notice it themselves and do it in the moment. So providing those opportunities in practice, I mean, it's just so vital.
Oh yeah, I'd argue you've got an ecological hat on there.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, tell me more about this course, you know, and why we should understandably be excited about it.
Yeah, it's all thanks to the brilliant guys at Emergence, Tyler Yubi and Sean Mishka. I'd written some stuff for a goalkeeping coaching education company, and they ended up, they packed in the end, partly because I took too long to write stuff. and it was like a year later by the time I started getting things finished, and he was like, I'm really sorry, we decided to pack things in. I was like, oh, okay. So I tweeted that I had loads of stuff and does anyone want it? And they contacted me and was like, look, we'd love to host a course that was built around this. So realized goalkeeping is extremely niche and I'd probably get 5 people want to do the course. So we ended up expanding a bit more into soccer more broadly, or football. And yes, it's been about 9 months in the planning. Wanted to do something a bit different. I wanted to make it kind of live and real, with coaches sharing their experiences rather than like a more traditional Coach Eddie online kind of thing. So we've capped the numbers. We've kept the groups really small, so it's quite nested, and we get to actually discuss real coaching problems and then just apply some of the principles of ecological dynamics to these problems and see if we can solve them, see if it is a useful thinking tool, see if it is a useful way to look at the world of football and apply some stuff. That's all it kind of is, really. It's rather than me sitting there saying you should do ecological dynamics because it offers us this, this, and this, and it's brilliant, and then we can solve this problem, It's a bit more just kind of exploring the concepts and seeing where they fit with real problems, trying to drive it from a practice perspective rather than driving it from this theoretical framework. So hoping it's going to be a really interesting course. We've basically sold out what our target was, and we've extended to include another two seats just because popularity has actually surged. And I think we want to run it one more time in the summer after this first set. So yeah, it all seems to be really good. It kicks off this week, the first set does, the first split rather. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. A lot of live sessions, a lot of online kind of informally discussion stuff throughout the week. Got a couple of guests who I've done some recording with, some wicked guests, biased obviously, like Danny Newcomb. I've forgotten my guests already. Dave Lucas from Fleetwood Town, who heads up their goalkeeper department. Yeah, so people who, and those conversations are more kind of how did you adopt an ecological approach? Why did you? Through exploring their journey rather than saying, why do you think ecological damage is brilliant? It's more, well, how did you stumble upon it? How did you engage with that journey? And what does it offer you in your context?
And that can be so important for, you know, anything that's a coach development program. You know, what is the relevance? What's the realism in what I'm being told here? How do I apply this in my context? So that sounds, you know, in principle and in theory, and I'm sure it will be in practice, really, really useful for coaches. And as you mentioned, you know, we've missed the boat perhaps for this first round, but I'm sure that there'll be success and therefore opportunities in the future to get involved with it again. Without giving too much away, could you give us one nugget, one thing that we could expect to perhaps take away from a course such as yours?
Me not being right all the time, which I'm quite keen to make quite clear. I've tried to make it clear anyway, that when you're coming onto this course, you are driving the bus as much as I am. I can't profess to know everything and have experienced all coaching environments, because in truth, I'm a slightly arrogant, jumped up 25-year-old who has happened to read some stuff and be involved in some really cool environments. So I can't profess to have all these answers I'm going to give coaches. Hence why I want them to bring their experiences. What I can offer, I hope, and I think, is quite a good understanding of this framework and what it looks like in practice. So I think what I'd take from this is it's a bit of a problem-solving exercise. Bring your coaching problems, bring the things you experience in the moment, in coaching, in games, in planning programs, and see if we can apply some of these principles to basically be a bit of a problem solver for you. And whether you can then take that away looking forward, can you then take that mindset or use this as your world, ecological dynamics as your worldview, to then approach those problems in context and start to understand the experience of soccer under this new perspective, or under this different perspective rather?
Sounds great. We will have to have you back later down the line when you've experienced it, the course is delivered, and you can tell us all about, you know, the successes and the challenges that is inherent with anything that is coach development.
Absolutely.
If you'd be up for telling us about it. Ben, thank you so much for everything today. Really appreciate it. If anyone was wanting to reach out, where would it be best to find you?
Twitter is best. My at is Ben_twice Franks1. Or just email me, find my contact details on the Oxford Brookes staff pages. That's probably the easiest way as well.
Yeah, I'll make sure that those links are on the description to the pod, along with the link to the course as well. You never know, you might offer up some extra spaces for people. just leaves me with one last question. If you could have an audience with anyone you wanted, just one person, who would you choose?
That's a question. It's gonna be really basic and ecological psychology. It'd be James Gibson. It'd have to be James Gibson, from kind of at the time he wrote the 1971 book on the ecological approach to perception. It'd have to be then. Him at that time, yeah.
and he's quite pivotal, right, for the theoretical framework. I'm going to ask you a slightly odd question here. What do you think he'd ask you?
Why have you butchered my approach?
What are you doing?
I don't know. I'd like to hope he appreciates that we're trying to push it into the sporting world, and we're trying to keep it attached to a real reality.
I
think we'll be best pleased.
I'm sure it'll be a valuable conversation. Ben, look, once again, thank you so much for your time today. Just leaves me to say, welcome to the tribe.
I've loved it. Thanks a lot.
I thoroughly enjoyed that. Not sure I fully agree with Ben that I'm in the EcoD camp, but I appreciate his candor in explaining what can be a really contested space of coaching rhetoric. The music you are listening to is by BB Phoenix. You can find her details in the links. If you haven't already, please do subscribe and leave feedback to keep growing the tribe. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to having you back next week.